Before we get started, I have an exciting announcement. Deliberations is going to start releasing mini episodes in between our regular releases. These will be called Jury Breaks. Our first Jury Break is going to feature a real lifestyle submissive. She's going to share some information about her life I think you'll find both interesting and valuable. If anyone has any questions you'd like to ask a lifestyle submissive, please email deliberationspod@gmail.com. I want to know what you want to know. Also, if anyone has a background or professional working knowledge of our jury system, I would love to talk to you. The email address is deliberationspod@gmail.com. I can't wait to hear what you'd like to ask our first guest. I'd also like to mention how thought-provoking and funny some of the comments are in the Facebook group, Deliberations Room. If you haven't yet joined, search for Deliberations Room on Facebook. You can also find me on Facebook at Deliberations Pod, on Twitter at Deliberation Pod, or check out our home site, deliberationspod.com. The conversations I'm having with you all is the single most rewarding thing I've experienced. Thank you. And now please enjoy this ad-free episode.
Jurors were sent to deliberations in the salacious trial of Samantha Hall, nicknamed Femme Fatale in the tabloids.
Charged with first-degree murder, an arguably risky charge given that the victim, Troy Singer, died of injury during a lone sex act.
Your verdict should not be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. Your verdict must be based on the evidence.
Samantha Hall faces a murder conviction in the death of Troy Singer, her submissive lover she instructed to hang with a rope in her absence. Finding her responsible for intent, negligence, or reasonable conduct will be the difference between a first-degree, manslaughter, or not guilty verdict. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress.
To prove the crime of second-degree murder, the state must prove the following three elements beyond a reasonable doubt. So again, all three. Number one, Troy Singer is dead. Number two, the death was caused by a criminal act of Samantha Hall. And number three, there was an unlawful killing of Troy Singer by an act imminently dangerous to another and demonstrating a depraved mind without regard for human life.
So the first two are the same as first-degree murder, right?
Yes.
So we're just looking at the third one now, then.
Right. So an act is inherently dangerous to another and demonstrating a depraved mind if it is an act of or series of acts that, number one, a person of ordinary judgment would know is reasonably certain to kill or do serious bodily injury to another.
Well, that's a yes for sure. That fits that.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so.
And number two, is done from ill will, hatred, spite, or an evil intent.
We don't know that that's true. That's just, it's speculation.
And I think I agree with Mandy on that one.
Number three, is of such a nature that the act itself indicates an indifference to human life. In order to convict of second-degree murder, it is not necessary for the state to prove the defendant had an intent to cause death.
It doesn't need to, the state doesn't need to prove intent to kill, but it does need to prove evil intent.
Which is so subjective.
Which is very subjective.
Yeah.
Evil.
Very subjective.
Like, you could accuse her whole lifestyle of being evil if you don't, if you think if fetish is not your thing, you could judge it the hell out of it.
So it's entirely opinion as far as, I mean, we don't know about criminal intent. We don't know if she intended ill will on him. So then it's just our opinion of her life and existence.
Right.
I mean, if you look at it in black and white, was it a good intent or was it an evil intent? Because it wasn't good.
If it was consensual, does it make
if
it evil?
If she's trying to please someone, can't that be seen as good?
But she said specifically it's not even about him. It's not about pleasing him. It's for her. She said that
don't
it was
you get,
for her.
Though, that her even saying that it's not about him made it about him. That's what he wanted to hear. He wanted to hear every single mean thing she said. He wanted.
Well, you don't know that.
We don't know
it
that.
It is.
Sure.
He said in his own email correspondence and all the messages that he posted on FetFinder that he loved being essentially like, you know, shat on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. This is a tough one.
I'm trying to look through the specific qualifications and definitions in addition to.
So basically, we're trying to find evidence that she possessed ill will, hatred, spite, and evil.
Well,
intent.
I think that's the thing is that it's not just evil, and you know, like I have a very clear definition of good and evil, and I know some people it's more varied. But think about it as ill will.
Right. Why don't we? I suggest that we read the 2013 online correspondence.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Because it goes into all of that. And here's what it says. I want to slowly watch the life drain out of your face. I want to feel the pulse in your neck fade under the palms of my hands. I want to watch your eyes fill up with fear and know I can take everything from you in seconds, and that you would lie there and allow me to do it.
Okay, listen to that.
That
sounds evil to me. And, and if it doesn't sound evil, it at least sounds like ill will. Let's go to the other one. She said, "This is what she said. Go to the playroom. I have a setup waiting for you. Stand on the step stool while you get ready, and then kick it away. Your toes should barely touch the floor. Hang until you're at the brink of unconsciousness, then pull to release the knot. This isn't for you. It's for me. Send me a pic when you're done so I can see the blue of your lips and rope burns on your neck."
Right.
I will continue to state that all of that was for Troy's benefit. That was everything that made him feel good. I mean, it's just so evident from all of the correspondence that we see from him. He wanted to be held down. He wanted to be choked. He wanted to be told what to do. He wanted to be tortured. He was looking for that. So she was giving him exactly what she wanted, and I don't see any ill will in that.
Do you think she had a depraved mind? Would you call her depraved?
No. I wouldn't.
You wouldn't
that's
say that.
Subjective.
I wouldn't date her myself.
That's subjective.
Yeah, like, that's not what I would call her.
She's clearly depraved. This is depraved behavior. And this is like the definition of depraved.
Because now we're passing judgment on an entire subculture of the BDSM subculture. And I find it hard to believe that we think all of these BDSM practitioners are depraved individuals. I just find that very hard
to stomach. It's depraved by definition, but fine. We won't argue about that.
Whose definition? Yours?
The dictionary definition.
No, I'm sorry. I have dictionary.com on my phone. I'll pull it up if you want, Carl.
How about imminently dangerous? Yep. This is mm-hmm. imminently dangerous, is it not?
So is drinking. Yes. So is not, smoking a cigarette.
Not the same as telling yourself to stand. And as
true,
we heard from the expert before, from the other BDSM person, she said that she would never tell someone to get on a stool. She said, remember that. She said she'd have them stand on the floor because it's just not safe doing it with the stool this way. Why would she have him go on the stool and kicking out unless she intended for his death? It just doesn't make sense. In the least... It's needlessly dangerous. It's imminently dangerous in the least.
Carl, is it possible that her intentions were good?
No, but I don't see that.
Let me finish. That her intentions were good, but that she was careless, that she made a mistake when she made this setup.
No, everything that we've seen about her character and her personality, to me, makes me think that she did not have good intentions.
Does anyone else think that that's a possibility?
I think it's a possibility. I will give that I think that there could have been some negligence with certain parts of the setup and the, you know, whatever rig she
and
was
that's
doing.
What I keep coming back to is that negligence. Should she be held accountable for that?
Right. Absolutely. Yes.
If that is the case.
A man
she wasn't
dead.
There to
or,
watch.
Exactly, Janet. Exactly. You just
but
said she wasn't there to watch.
She set it up, though.
She set it up.
She set it up, and
but
he
Mandy,
chose to go
But
in.
She knew he would follow his instructions. Or her
he
instructions.
Was made to.
Without
the same way
right,
that
without
a child
questioning.
Follows a parent's instruction.
Yeah, exactly.
If a parent puts a child in harm's way, tells them, go over here, go play in the street.
Exactly.
Knowing full well
go run in
that
front
they're
of
going
the
to be
car.
Hang on, hang on.
Play with
if that child is then hit by a car, is the parent responsible for it?
That's a different situation.
How is that different?
Because there was also a release. In the same situation, a crazy parent would say, go play in the street. If a car comes up, you run out of the street. And that's what she told him to do, and he didn't.
Okay, so if the parent then says to the kid, if a car comes, run out of the street, but the kid gets hit by the car anyways, is the parent still responsible?
This isn't a parent-child situation.
It's the same relationship.
But it's correct.
I disagree. It's not the same relationship. Do you think that, Dominic, do you think this is exactly like a parent-child relationship?
No, but I'm trying to
So we can't
argument.
Use that situation.
Fine, if it's not exactly the same, I understand what he's saying, and I agree with his argument where he's saying that there is responsibility on her part as the guardian, caretaker, person in control. The dominant, yes. There is an inherent responsibility to her where she's responsible for what happens, whether it's how hard she – if she had her hands on his neck directly and was choking him and she squeezed his neck too hard, then she's responsible for squeezing his neck too hard. Even if he agreed to let her squeeze his neck, she still did it. That's on her. It's the same as it's like he said, a parent saying go play in the street, or if you said go play with the chainsaw. The kid is, yes, I want to play with the chainsaw, but it's the parent's responsibility because they should know better. They should know that's in what's – we keep going back to this phrase, imminently dangerous situation.
And I do think a dominant-submissive relationship is so unique that – when we're trying to illustrate points and we use analogies that aren't perfect, I think we have to forgive each other that leeway, like to try to illustrate the point we're making. Like, they're not a child-parent relationship, but for all intents and purposes, that dynamic holds true to me, that it is like a parent telling a child who's
going
to blindly trust that parent, go play in the street, and here's your out for if things get bad. But that's on you to determine when things are getting bad. Yes. And I'm going to peace out and enjoy it from a safe distance.
Right.
That feels negligent
to me. So I can see the analogy. Absolutely. I'm not saying I can't, but he's an adult. Yeah. And that's a major difference. That's a major, major difference.
Yeah. Can I ask you why are you so on her side still? Is it just to be contrarian?
I agreed that she could be negligent. What my job is here, Carl, is to be proven without a doubt that she intended to kill him. And that hasn't been proven to me.
Yeah, I find that very difficult because every time I feel like I'm leaning towards her being culpable, it, like you said, it comes back to this issue of consent and, you know, was he willingly participating in these activities? Because that makes a big difference. You know, if she had kidnapped him and was holding him hostage and, you know, hung him and that resulted in his death, that's a very different scenario.
But even if he consented, she still killed him in that scenario. If he consented to die, she killed him. He died by her hand.
The same argument could be made for, you know, physician-assisted suicide.
That's true.
We're not debating that.
But do you consider that immoral?
That's different.
That's
the outcome
is
expected to be
death. It's two consenting
death.
Adults yeah. who...
Yes.
But the outcome is death. The participants both know that.
And we don't know about the knot. That's the biggest problem I see.
You know, Mandy, I think there is reason... I'm so sorry. Continue.
No, I just think we don't know if the knot really was...
Which
intended
is,
to kill him or not. That's
reasonable doubt.
That's the only thing.
And I think that there is reasonable doubt as to whether the intention was to kill him.
Can I just read this again? Let me read this again. This is her own words. I want to slowly watch the life drain out of your face.
Right.
Every time you read now, it doesn't
how
make
is
it,
that not clear? She's fantasizing about his death.
2013 was that?
Yeah, it was 2013.
Yeah.
So she's been fantasizing about this for years.
But again,
and finally did it.
I don't understand
why we're even still debating that.
Because there's a difference between fantasy and acting out.
Plus, I can take everything from you in seconds.
Right.
I know. That's it's haunting.
Carl, have you ever flipped off someone in traffic or told someone I'm going to kill you?
Not like this.
When you said someone I'm going to kill you, did you actually mean you're going to kill them? I mean, how often do we say that day to day?
Yeah.
Troy posted a video on Facebook 3 months before his death. It was a recording of Samantha opening a present Christmas morning.
Here she goes. What's funny?
I'm just relieved. I thought it was a ring. You don't give a woman a jewelry box and record it on your phone.
They're the earrings you wanted in Aspen.
Oh, I forgot about these. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're relieved I didn't propose.
You know what I meant.
Yeah, that you're relieved that I didn't propose.
Troy, you didn't propose.
No, but if I had, what would you have said?
No.
Another piece of evidence was a voicemail retrieved from Samantha Hall's cell phone. It was left 8 days before Troy died.
Sam, call me back. One of your credit cards must have been halted again because of a fraud alert, and we have utilities on autopay coming out of that account that are now past due. You have to keep up with this. Can you please take care of it or call me back with the card info so I can take care of it? Thanks.
If anyone's looking at their relationship and thinking it was rocky or there was problems with it, like, I won't begrudge you that point of view, but nothing about any of that evidence makes me think it's like to an inflammatory degree, like it was about to burst or was about to go really bad, really fast.
I agree with you, Mason. At least in the evidence that was presented in court, it just sounds like regular.
It's pretty weird. Yeah,
I think, again, exactly. If you look at it in the larger scope of things, this is just another piece of the puzzle. Like, in and of itself, maybe it's not significant, but if you look at it with everything that we've seen from her before, there's never any I love yous from her. There's never any joy or emotion or anything except for when she's talking about beating him or causing him pain or fantasizing about his death. That's the only time we ever see any real emotion or anything that she seems to be really into when it comes to him.
I think that's really disturbing. Facebook video about a normal couple having a normal couple relationship. I thought you would have enjoyed
couple.
That.
That this is not a. There's
but I think
nothing
we're trying.
About
I think
this.
We're trying to decide. You know, again, the prosecution was trying to argue that their relationship was on the rocks, and like Mason said, I just didn't feel that the evidence they presented, the video, and then you know, this voicemail. I just didn't feel it was it was compelling.
If she was in any way in financial trouble, she could have married him, and that would have been taken care of, or asked him, told him as his dominant to give her money, and there goes that problem.
Yeah, so, she didn't need to kill him to get his money. He would have just given it to her regardless.
Exactly.
So if disagreeing on getting married and if not paying your bills on time or having a miscommunication with your auto billing, if those are signs of someone being in danger of being murdered,
then half this country would then be
exactly.
Exactly. Right. Okay. Okay. But you know, again, let's look at this as part of the bigger puzzle. Let's look at this and the previous exhibits, which all show how she treated him. No matter what was going on, she was emasculating, she was disparaging, and we keep getting back to that word indifferent. She was definitely indifferent towards him. She said that she would say no, that she wouldn't marry him. She really never shows any joy or affection or anything towards him.
Was she emasculating or was she just a confident woman and you're not comfortable with that?
Janet, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say the only thing that does bug me just a little bit is that conversation with him getting a little upset at her. I don't think she would have liked that.
I thought it was so odd. It was the first time he showed
He's like
didn't that
a
make
little
you think
upset,
that maybe it was a little bit more of an equal relationship than it's being painted?
No. It made me think
he
that
stood in a closet
she's
going to
get him
hours.
For that because
equal.
He's like, well, you got to do something about this.
Well, then why wouldn't the state have shown us any information on a retaliation or any kind of evidence of a retaliation?
Well,
then?
I don't know. It could have been more building. And finally, she's like, okay, this noose is not going to work. I'm done with you.
I think if you look
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
Look at everything we've seen. Everything that we've seen for how she talks to him, the messages she's sent, how she treats him, it all fits a pattern. It fits the pattern of what Dr. Mesnick was talking about somebody who fantasizes about another person's death, who gets pleasure from pain. The part of the relationship that she seems to enjoy with him is the death fantasy and inflicting pain on him. And I haven't seen her seeming to enjoy anything else about him or the relationship except for when she's either hurting him or fantasizing about his death.
While Troy and Samantha kept their lifestyle secret from almost everyone in their lives, there were exceptions. Grace Sloan was one of them. The couple met Grace at a play party in 2013. She was in the community and accepted Samantha and Troy as the dominant and submissive couple they were. Over time, Grace, a switch, someone who switched between dominance and submission, became close to Samantha. They kept in touch on FetFinder and met occasionally for coffee or wine. Grace testified that Samantha found solace in having an understanding friend in which to confide.
I was a sub when I was younger, but I grew into my role as a dominant. A lot of people evolve that way. Although, Sam was never submissive to anyone, as she had a habit of reminding me.
Have you found through your experiences that the level of discipline varies from dominant to dominant?
Yes, every person is different. Every relationship is different. Some are gentler, some are rougher.
Was Samantha gentle or rough?
She was rough.
Physically or mentally?
Both. She liked very intense play, and she never had a lot of patience for those who didn't.
Meaning?
She had a couple ex-boyfriends who couldn't take that much pain. She used to mock them to me.
At this point during Grace's testimony, Samantha shook her head and started scribbling on a page between her and her lawyer.
How did she mock them?
She used to say...
Objection.
No, no. Don't tell us what she said exactly. Just... In what circumstances would she mock them?
If someone was complaining or whining, she would liken them to her ex-boyfriends. She would laugh at them. And in a way that suggested she had no tolerance for people with a lot of limitations.
Did she ever hurt one of her boyfriends?
Yes. I know she hurt one seriously. Guy named David? She was flogging the bed next to his face to startle him, and right before she struck, he turned his head. One of the strands caught him in the eye. It was a bad injury. He had to go to the hospital to have his eye checked out. Had to wear one of those patches.
Did Samantha seem remorseful when she recounted this story to you?
No, she seemed annoyed. As in, can I believe he caused all that drama by not doing what she said?
Was she upset that she'd hurt him?
No, she didn't seem to care.
Well, that was a really interesting... I mean, Grace's testimony was really interesting to listen to. I mean, it kind of showed... It gave us an insight into Samantha's behavior outside of her relationship with Troy, which, you know, I'll have to admit, it was pretty difficult. I mean, she does kind of seem to not
indifferent,
care
right?
about
yeah.
other right. people's
because
feelings.
Up until now, there's been an attempt by some people to say that when she's made these statements or seemed indifferent, it's because that's part of the relationship with him. She was doing it as part of play, but this wasn't part of play. This is just her being herself with a friend. Mm-hmm. And I think it's completely crystal clear that she does not seem to have empathy for other people. She doesn't seem to care about the physical pain that she causes them except for the pleasure that it gets her. She was not concerned that this guy could lose his eye.
Yeah, right.
That, to me, shows, you know, when you go back to the qualifications, that sounds like an indifference to human life.
I'll grant you that, Carl, and I think I agree with you. But just to throw this out there, where does the performance of being a dom stop? Like, if she's talking to someone else in the BDSM community, does she need to keep putting on
when you accidentally hurt someone? I would say
when you send someone to the hospital and potentially blind them,
right?
I think you can drop the act then.
Well, no, what you're saying, Mason, is that in the moment when that man, her ex-boyfriend, was wounded, they did take him to the hospital. They weren't still playing. But then when she was recounting it.
Yeah, gabbing about it with a fellow.
Was she in character?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was she in character?
She was annoyed. She wasn't even...
Yeah, her friend said it seemed like she didn't care.
But what Mason's saying is, in this conversation, was she playing the role of Dom? Like, was this
what
her being Dom?
What reason would
this
she
just...
have to be playing the role
I don't
with
know.
A close friend?
Because
right.
she's in
also
the
in the community.
And what have we seen from her at any point in this entire trial that would show a different type of person than what we're looking at?
That's a good point.
I give you this. I don't want to be her friend. I don't want to be her lover. But I don't see... she has negligence, but did she want to kill him?
I mean, again, like, here's an imperfect analogy, but like, if you go to a Renaissance fair and someone is in character conversing a certain way and then they're on their break and then you see them also continuing to play that character, am I going to accuse that person of being a time traveler from the Middle Ages, or am I going to say, wow, that person doesn't know when to turn it off?
Right, and I think that can go to the depraved mind. Maybe
she
has... I won't argue that.
She has a depraved mind. Maybe she can't turn it off.
Well, and that
maybe
goes
she's
back
this
to the,
person all the
yeah,
time.
Maybe that goes back to the thing we talked about earlier about, did this play slowly turn into reality and maybe she didn't even notice it. Maybe she's like a method actor and
right.
she was in the role for so long it became who she was.
Which, if that's the case, it I think makes it easier to see how it could turn from a fantasy of killing someone into actually killing someone, because at that point she's living it so much that it's hard to separate fantasy from reality.
Is that premeditative or is that negligence?
Well, we saw she was thinking about this years in advance, so right. in fantasizing about doing something and doing it, I think that fits the definition of premeditation.
All right, I agree with Dominic that we need to draw the lines here between premeditation and negligence. And when you keep referencing the message where she talks about how she wants to see the life drain from his eyes, that was specific. In that message, she said she wanted to see the life drain from his eyes and feel the pulse slow, and she wasn't there. So if you keep using that as an argument, it keeps falling flat because she wasn't there.
She wasn't there.
But
yeah.
it and doesn't. That does she's still. Me. She's still fantasizing about his death. So that was one message. She could have sent 50 messages, all with different death scenarios. We only heard that one. But the intent of it, the fantasy of it, is for this man to die, and that she would get pleasure from that. Yeah. And we've seen piece of evidence after evidence after evidence showing that this is her. Like her friend just said that she hurt this man. And instead of saying, like, yeah, we took it too far or something, she essentially blamed him for not listening. And any time that this happened with other boyfriends, it was a similar approach.
Yeah,
If you're gonna
this is a pattern.
If you're going to harp on the wording, though, so carefully that she wants to watch the life drain from his eyes, then I got to be specific, too, about the grammar and the tense. Like, she didn't say, I want to see the life drained from your eyes. Drain. It's present tense. It's active. It's like she does not want the finality of it.
It really bothers me that she, if we're arguing that it was intentional, it really bothers me that she wasn't there to watch it. Because, again, all of this evidence that we are looking through about her behavior and her personality, if this was intentional, it seems like she's the type of person that would want to be there to witness it. And it really bothers me that she wasn't.
If it's not intentional, if you don't agree that it's intentional, could you at least agree that it's indifferent?
I think that's a valid point.
Reaching a consensus on what goes on inside a person's head is an extraordinarily challenging task. Intent is murky. Demonstrable evidence is easier. Next time on Deliberations.
When I approached him, I noticed movement in his left hand.
We have a rope here in the courtroom today.
Wow, that comes apart really easily.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and launches as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast: Jury, Macklin McLaughey, Sam Britton, Sierra Marks, Lindsay Rousseau, Adam L. Sharkawi, and Alice Bowden. Courtroom: Verena Forster, Cambrian Thomas, and Michaela Fleming. If you have a question for a lifestyle submissive I'm interviewing for our first mini episode, please email deliberationspod@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter @deliberationpod or join the conversation on Facebook by searching for Deliberations Room. If you like this podcast, please tell your friends. I'm eager to spread the word about what we're doing, using fiction to explore the complex and sometimes maddening jury system. Thank you for listening. And I'll see you for our first jury break.